Arrow crawled along the wooden beams in the loft of the barn, her bright yellow ninja garb keeping her well hidden amongst the shadows and cobwebs that dominated the loft. Her considerable bulk did not seem to cause the beams to creak. Her ample and curvaceous arse quarters did not seem to knock any of the hay aside. Arrow, after all, was a ninja, and ninja training means you can't be seen, no matter what. She leaned over the edge of the loft, staring directly into the faces of the bandits. They had stolen several bushels of oats from the local village. The foals in the stables would go hungry without these oats. So she stared directly into this bandit's eyes. Her hot breath danced across his face. She let out a sigh and a whinny. They would pay. "I don't see a blasted thing," grumbled the bandit. "That nuisance horse must have followed us here. But how was I to know she was a five-element ninja and a master of the man-eating eagle hoof?" "Don't worry about that cretinous asshole," grinned the other bandit as he patted his kyang. "She'll never get the drop on us. And if she does, we'll just burn them. Then there'll be no oats for anyone." Incensed, our mighty steed proceeded. In the forest of Podcastville, Arrow practiced the man-eating eagle hoof. She felled massive redwoods with a single kick. Now she launched that same hoof into the chest of the remaining bandit, knocking the wind and most of his entrails out of him. Spinning now into a cartwheel with unseen agility, she wrapped the other bandit's face into the folds of her buttocks and used her secret knockout gas jutsu. Brutal efficiency, but they will stand trial. They still lived. Enraged though she was, Arrow was not bereft of mercy. She could never lose herself. The amount of oats she recovered was more than enough to keep the stables running for a long time. Of course, the villagers didn't see the bright red barrel of oats she held behind her back. Of course, she didn't choose to let them see it. She was really stealthy, and after all, that magazine's mail-order ninja kit had promised excellent results. So, this month, we are going to talk about Shinobi 3, Return of the Ninja Master for the Sega Mega Drive, or Sega Genesis if you prefer. However, before that, I am your host, Matt, and this is my co-host, Chris. How has your September and first bit of October been?
September and October have been pretty alright. My September started off pretty poorly because I was sick pretty often. I guess it was the changing weather, but it's still changing weather. So I just got sick because my health is just top notch. But otherwise, once it started getting better, Jordan came to visit, so that was really sweet. I won't go into his saptastic stories here. But I did get to play a lot of games since he brought his Switch. So, I got to play Puyo Puyo Tetris. I had first played that on the PS3, like, at PAX against Kevin Chai and a gang. And I got my ass kicked, and it turns out I'm still really garbage at Puyo Puyo Tetris. So nothing has changed.
I thought you were going to get that for the PS4 when it released as well.
I was going to get it, but everyone seemed to buy it for the Switch, so I had no one to play with. And it was going to be a lonely experience. So here I am, sitting without the game anyway.
If only Sony was keen on cross platform play.
Oh man, that'd be so cool. Step it up, Sony. What are you doing? I'll get it in time, maybe. Maybe when I get a Switch, eventually, if I do get a Switch.
that was almost pretty much confirmation that you're getting a Switch.
Yeah, almost. But the notable game I did play on the Switch is that I got to try out Breath of the Wild, that new hot Zelda game that everyone kind of lost their minds over. And right. You know, starting it off, I have to admit, I am enjoying it, but it doesn't quite feel like Zelda. It's not very much a balance of dungeoneering and exploring the overworld. It's just primarily exploring the overworld, and that may just because I decided to ignore the main quest at hand and instead I wanted to go traverse the world, which is pretty neat, and it's maybe it's just the beginning area is a little empty, but what do you expect? I did actually die, so that's amazing. I went up against, like, a palette swap bulk of wind or something. I don't know, it was a mo- whatever. It was some generic enemy, and I died because why do I keep hitting the right analog stick as lock-on? I'm not sure what game I got that habit from, but yeah, that didn't end well. Eventually I got the hang of it, and I did more exploring. I think my coolest death in Breath of the Wild is that I wanted to visit this place called the River of the Dead, and I fell in it and died. So it was pretty cool. It's pretty cool because it actually is an ice river, and I froze to death.
Yeah, it sounds like Breath of the Wild is quite a bit different than the other Zelda games, which is a good thing, because Nintendo has said for the last 5 Zelda games that they were going to reinvent the wheel with it, and they didn't. So I know there's a lot of people that are kind of disappointed with the amount and scale of dungeons, as well as sort of disappointed with the boss variety. But I appreciate that Nintendo's done something quite a bit different with Zelda. I think it's probably popular enough you'll probably see another Zelda in this vein. But for the time being, it's good that they tried something novel with it.
Yeah, I mean, I have been so salty about the past few Zelda games I've played that saying that I'm enjoying it so far, especially in the beginning of the game where I usually get really pissed off at Zelda for hand-holding or some stupid garbage at the beginning of the game, I'm actually enjoying the first, and how many hours I played, like 2 or 3 hours, so it's pretty cool, and the world looks gigantic. I've only explored, like, I guess one sector, or that's as far as I could go up until I feel like I got kind of, not really stuck, but I was, like, too intent on exploring this one area, and I didn't really progress anywhere else. But otherwise, yeah, it's pretty cool. When I do get a Switch, whenever that will be, I would like to play more of it and just see how I feel of it at the end of it, because it does seem like a really expansive game, and even if I say it doesn't quite feel like Zelda, I mean, that's kind of good right now, because Zelda has not made me feel good in a long time.
Yeah, that's a good thing then, because, again, I haven't been satisfied with Zelda myself in a long time either, and in a sense, Breath of the Wild goes back to a lot of the same tenets that the very first Legend of Zelda prescribed to, and a lot of the promotional art, of course, for Breath of the Wild sort of mirrors, you know, promotional art and art for the Legend of Zelda, so it's sort of going back to some of the main tenets of those games, just presented in a different way, presented in a more modern open world kind of way, but you know, kind of carrying on that spirit. Like, it doesn't have to, it shows that Zelda doesn't have to pigeonhole itself to have the spirit of Zelda.
And combat wise, since I was also like to bring up combat, it definitely feels a lot better than Skyward Sword, but I think that's a given, because Skyward Sword combat was garbage, and I will always trash on Skyward Sword, but that's we'll leave it for another time, I guess.
Skyward Sword had a cute beetle, but and a cute beetle. But I mean,
well, yeah.
Yeah. I found the combat maybe underrealized in Skyward Sword. I had a lot of problems with Skyward Sword, but again, that's not a topic for right now.
Yeah. I guess to give some context, Skyward Sword was pretty much the last Zelda that I completed. Not completed. I couldn't even do Hero Mode because I got bored with the game. Last Zelda I beat fully, yeah. What's the last big Zelda game? I think it was A Link Between Worlds, and then I played a demo of that at one point, and I just didn't feel like it. It didn't seem awful, but it didn't reel me in. So, yeah, that was the last time I really even cared about Zelda.
I know I've read very, very split opinions on this. I think it's better received than Triforce Heroes was, but
is Triforce Heroes even, like, a full Zelda game, or is it just kind of, like, I don't know, a spin-off like Link's Crossbow Training? Although, Crossbow Training was actually a fun game. Not gonna lie about that one.
I think Triforce Heroes was sort of like Four Swords, because it was sort of online co-op with dungeons. So, it's about the extent I know about it.
Yeah, I barely know anything, except it had a dog meme in it or something.
And then you could dress Link up. And,
oh, yeah, okay, those are the two things we know about the game. Good, we have a lot of information here. In any case, the other game I played, not on the Switch, but because I said, okay, why not, I'll start it up, was I played Hot Game of 2010 Nier. I didn't get far in it. No, I know how to do the wall jump, that's completely useless, and how far did I get? I got my daughter back, and then I got dumped with a bunch of side quests on the village, and that was about it. Because then, you know, we got back to Dark Souls, which I'll talk about super soon. But yeah, that was the extent of stuff I did in Nier. I didn't even meet Kaine yet.
Yeah. You didn't meet Kaine yet, so I'm not going to say anything about Nier, because I kind of forget what happens in the first half of the game, like the order of events, so It's too dangerous to say anything with it.
Yeah, I know. We gotta keep it on the low. But I'll get back to it eventually. It's just... Of course, what I've been spending time with is Dark Souls. Yeah, I finally got past the Four Kings. It took me how many bazillion weeks? Screw you on New Game Plus, Four Kings. There's nothing to say. I hate them. And it got to a point where I started putting some level up stats into Vitality. So, finally, my HP bar exceeds my stamina bar. I guess Vitality goes a long way. I didn't think so. I thought it was better to just dump everything into Dex. But now that I've gotten to the Four Kings and gotten access to the Dark Wraith Covenant, I can do stuff I want to do for the longest time, like get all the rare items. So I'm working on that, and now I'm currently doing all the side quests differently than I did the first time, so some people have to, unfortunately, die. Someone has to die a bit earlier in a poisonous area, in a really crappily designed area, and then I have to go kill someone because they got a helmet before I did. And there's probably more side quests I gotta attend to, but I haven't gotten to them yet.
I feel like you have to kill Andre and get his hammer and things like that.
I think so. I'll do that at the very end of the game because I also have to kill off the DLC NPCs for their stuff too.
Okay. You're going to do the DLC again?
Yeah, I need to get that Obsidian Greatsword. It's not for the trophy, but it's a personal trophy for me.
Yeah. Well, if Calamite's not required, you can just get this tail and... And Hightail, they're there, but it'd be better to kill him because that would be the honor of doing it on New Game Plus.
I've always wanted two Calamity Rings. You can't even equip both at once, but they'd be sitting there in my inventory, taunting me.
At least Priscilla is safe, I guess.
But, yeah, Priscilla is safe. Yeah, I'm gonna spare her. I got her tail already, and I got her dagger from using her soul, so she's safe. Unlike my spouse of choice, who will have to die near the end of the game because I'm trying to wait for it. So, yeah, I cleared Painted World because I could. I got, like, you know, the Cult Ember and then all the stuff in there, but Priscilla, I just left her be. She can enjoy her peaceful land.
Yeah.
Everyone else in this playthrough is not going to have a very nice fate, but, you know, that's what the real... path for me is New Game Plus 2. That's where everything's gonna go right. I'm gonna join Darkmoon Covenant and it'll be great. Everything as it should be. But yeah, right now I have to, like, I wish I did all the forging in my first playthrough, but I was playing it somewhat blind, so I didn't think of doing that yet. So now I gotta go get those embers all over again and all that, so I might as well just do all the areas again.
You'd have to get the mulligan anyways, unless you want to grind for Color Titanite on your first playthrough, and that's just not fun.
Yeah, so, and I missed Titanite on my first playthrough too, which is annoying. So now I have to go get the white Titanite slab for my Divine Rapier I'm trying to make just for the trophy, and I had two opportunities to get that, and I guess I didn't get it the first time, which is surprising to me because it's both in Tomb of the Giants, which, okay, I would probably expect not to see it there. But then there's one in the DLC area, and I thoroughly explored that area, but I guess I missed this one spot. And I don't think I used it, or maybe I did and I just don't recall. But then I would have gotten the trophy. I don't know. Anyway, the point is, I'm short a slab for this trophy. And then I have to fight Gwyn again anyway for his sword, since I used it to get Sunlight Spear. Well,
you have to fight Sif 3 times, so you gotta go to New Game Plus 2.
Yeah,
anyway.
Sif doesn't deserve this, okay?
No.
But I guess, you know, Artorias was so talented, he has to have 3 different things to craft instead of just 2. Anyway. Yeah, so that was pretty much how things have been going, just lots of Dark Souls again. Maybe I'll finally platinum Dark Souls, I can move on to Nier like I've always planned to. Or maybe I'll just jump to Bloodborne, I don't know. Maybe I'll take a break from Souls.
Yeah. Bloodborne and Nier, both excellent choices.
That's enough about me. How was your September and October, Matt? And how was your holiday?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we just passed Thanksgiving here in Canada, so that was pretty good. That was tasty and all that. It was a good time. It was a good time. September and October, they've been all right. As for what I've been playing, I can't really talk about it because presumably we're covering this game next month, and it's been mostly what I've played the last couple of weeks.
Well, so yeah, I've been playing some of that too, but I was like, yeah, I'm going to hold off on it.
Yeah, but I mean, I've been wanting to play it for a long time, so I just got on with it. I also played a lot more Sonic Mania. I think the last time I talked about this, I hadn't 100%ed it, but now I have. And I played a lot of Sonic Mania. I played through pretty well every combination you could do in it, including Knuckles and Knuckles. And, I mean, it's a Sonic game, so it takes just a couple of hours to get through it if you know what you're doing, and I can get the Chaos Emeralds before the end of the second zone now, so it's not that big a deal to play through it, but it's still a lot of fun. It's definitely a contender for one of my games of the year because, I don't know, games is fucking outstanding. The game's just outstanding. Other than that, I guess I really haven't played much of anything except said other game. So I don't really have a shitload to talk about. I mean, the TV show came out, Big Bang Theory spinoff, Chibi Sheldon No Densetsu. And it's a pretty good anime. It's not as good as Cory in the House, but it's a pretty fucking good anime, so...
Well, nothing will ever compete with Cory in the House.
So check that out, Chibi Sheldon No Densetsu. I did read a book in September. I thought it was going to be alright to read. I figured it might be a bit overrated because there's such a lot of hype around Ready Player One. So I went in with tempered expectations. And I expected, you know, some cute references or whatever. People just told me that if you like video games, you like this book, which, you know, I guess I should take as the same as if you like Castlevania, you like fucking Helsing. But Ready Player One really takes the whole reference, pop culture reference, 80s reference things to the masturbatory extreme. It's like, people are, like, talking about a movie and high-fiving each other because they get these references and that they fucking watch this movie, like, 15 times in the last month because, you know, the guy who's designed this Easter egg that they're trying to find in this online game, it was one of his favorite movies, so, of course, to find it, they gotta watch this fucking 40 times and quote passages of this movie to each other and high-five about it, and, like, I don't fucking care. It's like, I'm a sucker for pre-crash video games. I love them, but it's just the way that Ready Player One handles it. It's literally the Big Bang Theory or Family Guy of books, because it's like, you know, fucking look at us and look what we can reference, and yeah, man, this fucking yeah. Look what we got in our book. We got the fucking DeLorean, and then we're going to tell you what year that Back to the Future came out, and all the fucking actors in it, and then who put the gas in the gas tank in the DeLorean on the seventh day of filming. There's ways to do references, and there's ways to just, like, verbally shit all over your book in a way that it's going to, you know, some things are going to tickle your fancy. There's a couple of moments in the book that I thought, okay, this is pretty cool what's happened. And there were, and that was when it was more focused on one thing. When he gets the first key, that was actually a pretty cool moment, how that transpired. Because it was quite focused on one module of one thing that I have a personal attachment to. So, yes, there is a bit of, you know, playing on the old heartstrings there. But it was focused. There wasn't a whole lot of ancillary bullshit about when these came out and when the designer of Oasis, you know, played it himself and when it came out and who wrote it and who started it and all this other fucking shit. That it's like, you know, if I wanted to read that, and sometimes I do, I just go on Wikipedia or IMDb or whatever, or, you know, any other fucking site that shows the credits or something. Or maybe it's something useful I could use when I'm playing Jeopardy. But when I'm reading a book and I want to be told a story, you don't want a fucking info dump about the minutiae of when something was made. There's a lot of other problems with the book, including how fucking terribly it's written and how shitty the interactions between people are. And that might be some people might argue that that's part of the theme, because these kids are sort of indoctrinated into this online world where they don't really have any real-life interactions anymore. But I don't think I've ever acted this way online to people. And it's like, it's just unrealistic is what it is. It's just completely unrealistic. There's some themes and comments and such in the book that people are going to have problems with. I'm not going to get into the political side of that. My problem with the book is that it's poorly fucking written. I don't know. It just seems to me that it's getting a free pass because it's about the 80s. And people like the 80s. And I like the 80s, but I also like things that are well written. I don't know. That's just me.
I'm sorry that I've opened the salt mines. But I guess we could just watch Kung Fury instead. That's pretty good. You know, let's go watch Kung Fury.
Now, Kung Fury was good because, well, there was a lot of references and a lot of homages in Kung Fury, but it wasn't like, you know, he throws a punch and says, yeah, this is the same punch that Gordon Liu threw in, you know, whatever movie from Shaw Brothers in 1978 and hit this other actor in the face with. But it was actually hit in the face and not a choreographed miss because he swung his hand too fast. And then the caterers that day, you know, they got whole wheat bread instead of white bread. And then Gordon Liu complained to the people in charge of the filming that day because he doesn't like whole wheat bread. You know, and then the characters high five about that. It's not written like that. It's written in a way that pays homage to these things while still being fucking cool and having good flow. Anyways.
Maybe we should have a podcast on that instead, so we can make you feel better.
We could do Kung Fury sometime, but anyhow. I don't want to get too deeply into it, but there were moments in Ready Player One that I thought had potential, but a lot of it was just like hodgepodge of bullshit to punctuate the most basic male power fantasy, you know, that I've read in fucking ages. So I don't know, I just didn't like it. I've seen so much positive reinforcement of this book and very little that calls it out just for being poorly written. But going deeper into it, he's also written a book called Armada, which people say is everything Ready Player One is, but worse. So I'm not going to read that. And I originally read this book now. It's been people kind of suggesting it to me for like 4 years or something now. I read it now because there is a Emojila film coming out about it in whatever, a couple of months. So I was like, I better read it because I have been semi-interested in this book for, you know, the same amount of years. I may as well read it before it explodes everywhere and everything's spoiled on me. The movie looks worse than the book, but I'm not going to watch the movie either because, you know, I just, the book kind of turned me off ever seeing it. Anyways.
Do you have any way to spin this positively? This chat went downhill.
The positive spin is that I'm not going to waste my money going to the cinema to see Ready Player One.
We can also spin, like, see, you can write your low-key fan fiction and get it published, and maybe you'll get a film out of it.
Well, this happened for 50 Shades.
That's true. I mean, that worked out. So there you go. There's some positive spin on this entire mess.
So Shinobi 3 Return of the Ninja Master was released on the Genesis in 1993 as a direct follow-up to The Revenge of Shinobi and as a continuation of Sega's long-running Shinobi series. We follow Joe Musashi through 7 rounds of action and platforming towards the final confrontation with Neo-Z, the Shinobi series. Like, the whole ninja culture thing sort of has its troughs and apexes where, you know, it kind of resurges in popularity. And I know in the early 90s, late 80s, you could go into, like, a magazine store and find ninja magazines, or a lot of magazines might have, like, mail order ninja stuff in them, which we never ordered because nunchucks are illegal. There's always been this sort of, like, romanticized notion of ninjas. I'm not going to get into the whole history of ninja, but this whole superpowers, you know, frontline, slice them up kind of guy is a very romanticized and sort of not a real view of what ninja were, but that's sort of the kind of ninja that Joe Musashi is in this game anyways. Do you have any experience with the Shinobi series?
I actually have zero experience with the Shinobi series. When you brought up we're going to play 3, I was like, okay, that sounds like a cool game that I haven't tried anything about because I didn't even know it was a series, but apparently with like 8 different games, and the last one came out for the 3DS, and Musashi, maybe it was Joe Musashi, it was projects of this series, showed up in Project Cross Zone 2. So I guess because I tend mostly Nintendo consoles, this entire Sega franchise just went past me, so this is my first experience with it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say I want to start with Shinobi 3, because I think it's probably the best in the series. I'm not a huge fan of The Revenge of Shinobi, although I've grown to like it a bit more, and Shadow Dancer is a bit peculiar. And the first Shinobi, it's on the Master System, it's a bit more straightforward, and I guess we could play like the arcade game. They're good games, but they have sort of a very deliberate pace to them. That's Shinobi. What is your experience, if any, with other ninja games and this whole ninja subculture?
Well, being a 90s kid, where they just wanted to do all those cool ninjas things, you know, we had the Ninja Turtles, so of course I was into that. I think we discussed that extensively on, like, the nostalgic children's cartoon podcast a while ago. So yeah, I'm pretty sure I had the first Ninja Turtles game, which I was really bad at. I think you are more forgiving of it, but I'm just like, I don't really know how I feel about that. But yeah, there was also all the movies, and then I guess in terms of other ninja video games, I really haven't played much besides Striders, probably the only one, our cybernetic ninja friend, and the NES game, as we decided, is a decent game. And then there's also the Ninja Gaiden series, which I've always had interest in, but I've never played them. At least I know that they're notoriously difficult, especially the first one is just mean. But I've always wanted to pick up, like, Sigma or something someday, and I just haven't gotten around to it.
Yeah, you've also played The Legend of Kage a bit, right? So.
Oh, yes, the first one.
Yeah. Yeah,
which I don't even would consider a ninja game. I think it's just jumping around, I think, if that's what it was. And it loops a lot. And has the
There's
worst
lots
soundtrack.
Of ninjas in it. I mean, I've played a lot of the same things. I've played through the Ninja Gaiden games. I haven't played through 3, but that's mainly because it has limited continues in North America. So it's actually Ninja Gaiden 3 is more approachable than Ninja Gaiden 1 or 2. It's more forgiving. I just haven't put the time into that. Ninja Gaiden's a much faster-paced game than Shinobi, but it's also quite a bit different on multiple fronts than Shinobi is. I've played Kage as well, of course, and I had some Famicom pirate stuff as a kid, and I played a game in that called Zinja, which was sort of a top-down game with a lot of ninjas in it. So that was pretty cool. That game's actually called Ikki, IKKI, not Zinja, because all these pirate carts say the wrong name on them. I mean, I played a fair bit of them. Wrath of the Black Manta is not that good. Ninja Crusaders is good. Ninja Zsa Zsa Marokun, the Ninja Taro series is good. But yeah, I also like the Ninja Turtles. You're talking about Ninja Turtles 1. I actually quite like that game. I think its difficulty and its unfairness is vastly overblown. And as
I'm also
for
just
like
garbage the... at it. That's another thing about the first Ninja Turtles game on the NES.
Yeah. As for the whole ninja culture thing, I watched a lot of like old Shaw Brothers and other companies of the era martial arts movies as a kid, mainly because my older brother was into that kind of stuff. And ninjas featured in a lot of them, not so much, like not as much as like other martial arts, because most of these movies were Hong Kong movies, and Japanese martial arts movies from that era are not as plentiful, or at least they didn't come out over here quite as much, and it's just a shame because they tended to be a bit more extreme. But yeah, I watched a fair few ninja ones, Heroes of the East, and Five Element Ninja is probably my favorite one. So I liked all that stuff. We had a like a burnt out tree out in the woods that we used to make stuff and try on it. So I made my own nunchucks, and then I almost hit myself with them when they broke against the tree because they weren't
destined to be Michelangelo. I'm sorry.
Well, if, you know, you're a kid and you find a length of chain, and you decide that you want to make nunchucks, but you don't make them very well. Anyways, don't.
Is this why Donatello's your favorite? Hurt yourself.
Yeah, you can find a stick easy enough, you know, or an old broom handle or rake handle or something. But yeah. So yeah, I mean, I like that kind of stuff. It was just a part of what I watched at that time. There was a lot of, you know, weekends that I watched these movies late into the night, you know, or even when I started collecting DVDs, I'd buy these movies for like fucking a dollar at the bargain bins and stores, and I bought some awful, awful movies, but it's still fun to watch them and try to stomach your way through them. I had a friend that really liked these kind of movies as well, and he ended up busting his hand up trying to do, you know, a certain kind of punch to a frozen fence post at a farm once, and it's like, you know, stupid kid stuff, but it's, you know, there's some good memories associated with this whole subculture. My brother had a ninja poster from one of these magazines I talked about on his wall and all that stuff, so it's like, you know, the whole ninja thing was, like, again, very romanticized, which is kind of funny to think back on, but yeah, ninjas were big.
I mean, in a way, I still think ninja are cool, so clearly that romanticized ninja impression has stuck with me.
Oh, they're definitely really cool. And the real history of ninjas is pretty cool and intriguing as well. They just don't jump around in multicolored suits firing thunderbolts. So, you know, there's that.
So, Matt, have you seen the ultimate ninja anime, Naruto?
Moving on. So, how does Shinobi play? No, Naruto is something I cannot stomach. I just do not like it at all. It's terrible. But no, I didn't enjoy Naruto. And a friend of mine knew I didn't like it and kept trying to push Naruto media on me, so it made me like it even less. So Naruto, not my cup of tea. Not my cup of tea. So, moving on. Shinobi 3, I talked about the Shinobi series being a bit more deliberate in terms of ninja games. But how does it play? I mean, how deliberate is this game? And I know it has a lot of different techniques, but are they too difficult to master, or did they feel natural?
For the most part, combat-wise, I think most techniques you kind of pick up and kind of learn throughout the game, but then, you know, some basic things, which I'll get into later on in the game when they are dire for continuing, those are pretty difficult for some reason, and it's really not fair, but, yeah, I mean, I feel like most of the combat I do in this game is throwing the shurikens, which is just, you know, just spamming one of the buttons over and over, and to be fair, I mean, you get a ton of them anyway. And also, there's a slash attack, but it's, like, you do a dash move, and that's, like, the final hit. But to pull that off,
yeah. You
need to understand distance pretty well. Because, you know, first time playing this, I ran into a lot of enemies while trying to learn how to do that. But, you know, you learn what spacing is, and it comes pretty easy to pull off. And the second move I would always use pretty often is the jump attack, which is really useful because a lot of enemies are on the ground, and you can just keep bouncing off them. So those are pretty much the three effective moves I use, and then a lot of other things. You get some specials, which mostly are for bosses, but I guess we'll further discuss those when we get to them.
As for the slash attack, like, Joe will use his sword if you're close to an enemy anyways, but I think that the game has the potential to be played quickly, and the lunge that you're talking about is the way to play it quickly. You kind of have to know where the enemies are at, because especially for like the gunners, it's if you like run in this game, you're opening yourself up to a lot of pain. So you kind of got to know where things are if you want to play it quickly. But I think the potential's there. You're talking about the ninjutsu. Now, there are four different like specials that Joe can use. Did you find yourself using any of these?
I used Karyu, wherever it is, the fire one, fairly often for bosses. And Ikazuchi, which is the lightning one, that kind of shields you from damage for some time. That was pretty useful, especially later game. But the other two I barely used, so those were pretty useless to me. I think the other one is Fushin, which gives you a copy, and then there's Mijin, which I think recovers you, but then it kind of uses your life as, like, instead of the bar. I can't recall because I never used it, so.
Mijin is interesting because it does damage, but it also heals you, but by healing you, it kills you. So instead of, I think you're set back if you die, so. This is a sort of a desperation attack to get you back up to health, but it still costs you to do it. And it also gives you a jutsu back. Now, I've used it in pinches at some times, and then I couldn't select Ikazuchi afterwards. And even though I had the one jutsu left to do, I don't know how reliable that is or if it just does doing something wrong there. I think it's alright, and I think like if you get to the last boss and you're confident you can beat the last boss, you probably just... Probably just use this multiple times in a row and without really worried about running out of lives, but I don't really use that one. The jutsu I used the most was Ikazuchi the shield. The main reason for that is the bosses in this game take a lot of shurikens to die unless they're powered up. And if you take hits in Shinobi 3, your power meter for your shurikens drops, so it's you can power them up, but if you get hit, they start doing standard damage again. But using Ikazuchi, you can maintain your power shurikens, and you could tank like a couple of hits with this shield up and still have your powered up shurikens. So I find that the most useful.
And I want to correct myself. Fushin makes you jump higher, which you think would be useful for some things, but no, it's not that useful. So yeah, I barely use Fushin.
There's a very few places. There might be a certain rock area that might be interesting to use it in retrospect. Maybe. But there's only a couple of areas I could see it being remotely useful. But I think the stuff is cool, but you got to be really selective about when you use it because you only have one use per life unless you find scrolls.
Yeah, and those are, I think, at least one per stage. But again, I only found like one in one stage, and that was about it.
Yeah.
And also when you clear a stage, it's not like a stack or anything. Like you're back to one.
So speaking of the stages, touched on this before, but what do you think of the pace of the game?
I think it was alright. Especially because I wasn't too hot at the game at first. It was a lot of going through a stage and then dying and going through it again. But in the beginning, I think it's pretty fair with continues and all that. So having seven stages, it's not too bad, especially with the length of the game, I think it's fine. There's different pacing to different stages, but I feel like as the game progresses, it's kind of really the same. It feels like a pretty arcade game brought to the console, in my opinion.
Yeah, okay. I was just wondering if you found it maybe too slow, but it sounds like you found it alright.
I mean, there was one stage that was pretty slow, but I didn't mind it. It was like a good breather, but we'll get to that.
So as we mentioned briefly before, Shinobi 3 is broken into seven distinct chapters. Most of these, but not all of them, have sort of two distinct acts to them each. Sort of like a Sonic game, hey, on Sega. But there's usually a mini-boss and a boss, and a lot of little platforming in between. The first level It's pretty basic. Sort of in a forest to start with, in a cave later. But how can you describe sort of the flow of this level? And you think it sort of teaches you, you know, how you have to actually move through this game.
Yeah, the stage one is a fairly fast paced level. Of course, I died the first few times once I realized, you know, that was the thing about learning the distance to do the thrust attack, and then things are popping out of the tree, so that's when you need to know when to throw your shurikens. But otherwise, I think this level is intended to go through pretty swiftly, and once you get the hang of the controls and all that, it pretty much does. I mean, the cave area is a little slower because it's more, I guess the area is smaller, but otherwise it's fairly basic, and the mini bosses in there are also really nothing much to say.
Yeah, the mini boss is the like the samurai.
Yeah,
I think he's, yeah, and you encounter him later as like a standard enemy, and mostly he can block your shurikens with his sword, and you just have to kind of wait. You have just have to kind of wait for him to attack or lower his guard before you can hit him. But there's ample room to avoid him, and it's not very difficult. The actual boss is sort of the same deal, except it's like a four-armed, kind of like a four-armed Ashura kind of character.
Yeah.
And has like a dash attack, I think.
Yeah, it kind of just sweeps the screen, but you can just honestly just jump over that. It's pretty predictable.
And pretty straightforward fights, but I think that's, hey, it's like level one. That's kind of okay. I know you have to do some wall jumping in the cave. And wall jumping shows up a fair bit in this game. How do you like the wall jumping in Shinobi 3?
Well, it took me about halfway through this game to actually learn how to wall jump properly. So the Etkoons and Super Metroid are probably shaking their heads in shame right now. Yeah, I don't know why it took me so long to figure it out. I guess it's because I think you tap the wall and then hit the jump button. And then I guess I'm also used to, like, Mega Man X is going to be, like, my first wall jumping game. So it's always, like, both the dash and the jump button. So anyway, yeah. Any game with a wall jumping is probably going to throw me off for a very long time. And Shinobi 3 is no exception.
It's natural enough when you learn it. I think depending on how long you hold the jump button, if I remember correctly, determines how far you jump as well as how far you wall jump. And that is actually quite important in a later level. But yeah. For right now, wall jumping is pretty forgiving, but it's good that it's pretty forgiving now because it's important to know later how to wall jump properly. The other thing I want to talk about in the first level is just all these item boxes that are left around. Is it safe to just like run up and open every item box willy-nilly?
Absolutely not, because who keeps stuffing all this dynamite in all these boxes? Who is doing that?
Yeah, so these bombs in item boxes becomes a thing, and they usually have like a countdown from 5, but it doesn't always seem to run down. I don't know if it's a proximity thing or what, but
yeah, I have no idea either, but let's be quite honest, like, most of the time I've been breaking them anyway, because I just want to get through the stage. And, I mean, yeah. There's generally health near the end of like a section anyway, so it's not too bad. Although you get to be more cautious in later stages, but right now it's no big deal.
Yeah, this is a pretty, again, a pretty forgiving stage. And I don't think there's a whole lot of secrets to be found. There's a lot of levels later where not only do you have like the side-scrolling, but you can go up a little bit as well. I don't think there's a lot of that here. There's a little bit in the caves, but for the most part, this is a pretty straightforward one. And I think it teaches you the ropes. I think the double jump should be required a bit in this level, because the double jump is actually difficult to do in this game.
For some reason.
Yeah. It's like, it has to be at the apex of your jump, but there's a pretty tight window for it, and I would have liked to see a little more double jumping in this level, because you need to learn how to double jump in this game, or you're not going to beat it.
I forgot to mention earlier, there is another command that you don't really learn, but this got really useful much later on in the game. You can actually block. You can't block much,
yes.
But yeah, that took me so long to figure out.
Yeah, that's especially useful for ranged enemies in the later levels as well. Like you said, you can't block everything, so there's a lot of enemies with projectiles that shoot large projectiles at you and can knock you out of your block. But it is useful. It's useful to know, and you get more practice with that, I think, in the very next level. But we will head on to round two, Secret Entry. So this stage starts out a bit different than stage one.
Yeah, stage two begins as an auto-scroller, and you're on a horse. And pretty much as you're side-scrolling, ninjas will just fly out of the screen, and then you just throw your shurikens at them. That's pretty basic, honestly. I mean, you can jump occasional times to not ram into fences.
Yeah, but it's mostly you get items to jump. There's a little bit of an alert before you get to them. And all of these Kite Ninjas, I should have mentioned Legend of the Mystical Ninja in the first part of this podcast. I'm sorry, Goemon. You know, you're my bro. My apologies. And these Kite Ninjas may remind me of Legend of the Mystical Ninja. But yeah, I like Kite Ninjas, and they're out in full force in this level. I think it's pretty cool. There's a couple of levels like this in the game. I think this is the only one on a horse. It sort of teaches you these auto-scroller levels, and for an auto-scroller, it's pretty cool. And it feels cool, and it looks cool.
And it's a good horse, you know. It actually listens to you, like, jumps when you want it to.
Possibly the best horse in games.
Wow, Aggro's offended right now, but...
Yeah. The boss of, like, this horse section is a five-element super ninja, basically.
I guess, yeah.
After Image Ninja that jumps around doing cool shit. How do you find this guy?
This one took me a bit of time to learn just because it has a spear attack that sends out three spears coming down at you, and you need to time them. And this took me so long to figure out, but once you get the hang of it, it's like really easy to just dodge them. You just gotta know when to pull back and then when to charge forward, really.
Yeah, yeah. A powered chair can really eat this guy alive, but he can surprise you because he does the jump kicks and he does the, again, the spears like you mentioned. So it's mostly just about not getting taken by a surprise with this ninja. He is cool as hell, however, so he has that going for him.
I feel like the jump kicks are really easy to dodge with the spears that I had so much trouble with. But well, again, once you get the hang of it, it's really nothing.
So we get off of the horse for the second phase of this area. Now, this is more traditional shinobi. Like, the very first shinobi, you fought a lot of guys with guns and such. And now you're faced with gunners and guys with boomerangs and all that. And how do you deal with these enemies? And do they sort of signal a bit of a difficulty spike from the ninjas in round one?
Well, first of all, considering I had played no shinobi prior to this, I was very confused how we went from, like, you know, feudal Japan to, like, why are we in some industrial complex with guys shooting at me? So I have no context of the story going on here. What is the story of Shinobi 3? Whatever. Anyway, so in terms of the guys with the guns, I would usually just throw a shuriken at them. And then there's a guy with the shields where I learned, hey, the jump kick is really useful. So it's kind of a combination between, like, just throwing the shurikens and then doing the jump kick, because you just bounce off enemies, and you can just really dodge a lot of things just by jumping on things.
Yeah, it's good, it's good. I find that you can either try that or try to go at a bit of a slower pace and block a lot of things. But the boomerang guys I find a lot more troublesome than the gun guys, but...
They're later on.
Again, you gotta use your block a bit. Or if you can get close to these guys, the sword is really good, but that puts you in harm's way, so sort of a risk-reward thing there.
Yeah, usually when there's a shield guy, there's probably a guy, like, shooting bullets at you from behind him, so it's not good to run up against them.
Yeah. Actually, I think some of the combinations of enemies in this stage are even a little, but yeah, they're definitely a difficulty spike in from the ninjas, because you can't be as reckless as you were in round one, in round two. But hey, I didn't know this was a Konami game. You get in an elevator and fight waves of enemies.
Yeah, you just slowly go up this elevator, but they come one at a time, pretty much. You never get swarmed, at least in this elevator. So it's pretty easy. It's just know when to not get yourself crushed.
Yeah, and catch the guys as they appear on screen. It's not that not that bad.
I even took care of them with the slash attack, because They come at a rate that you can just get to them before they start shooting at you.
So, once we're through the elevator, we have to fight a robot boss, like a robot drone eye thing. What do you think of this boss?
Pretty forgettable because I barely remember this. I just remember throwing some shurikens at it a couple of times and that was it. Like,
it's different. Again, like I said, it doesn't take that much punishment, but it has some interesting attacks if you let it get to that point. Like, it can distort the screen, and I think this reverses your control, so that's a little bit testy of us.
Now that you bring it up, I remember that reverse your controls, but yeah, I mean, it doesn't really hit you for much damage anyway, so
yeah,
it was pretty, yeah, again, it didn't really matter.
So, round three, body weapon. So, now we're in a laboratory.
Yeah, I don't, what is the context?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different, like, creatures and such in this. And now, like, tell me a little bit about the creatures in Body Weapon, the laboratory.
Okay, so you got these, like, dudes who come out of the acid, but they don't really do much because you can usually just slash them before they come out. And then you have, like, these brains with fly wings on them that come out from the ceiling. It was just what? And then there's some brains that hop around. It's a really weird stage.
Yeah, most of these things are pretty easy to take care of unless, like, the brains pop out of the capsules right next to you, then it might be a little bit difficult to get the slash off. The yeah. brain flies are probably the worst enemy here because they can start their attack from off-screen. And this level introduces a bit more verticality to its side scroll. So oftentimes you're going up into an alcove and there'll be a brain fly waiting for you. What do you think about this sort of change in level design? Because now there's a lot of different alcoves and there's conveyor belts over acid and things like that. There's a lot more to explore in round three than there was in previous rounds.
Yeah, I didn't mind it too much. I actually like the change of pace. Just the brains jumping on me was not fun, but
yeah,
the conveyor belt part, though, that gave me some trouble because I couldn't figure out how to get over there, and then I found out, oh, yeah, you can actually climb on top of these. But otherwise, yeah, I like the change of pace, and I like exploring the areas once I figured out that I could jump to places and latch onto things.
Yeah, yeah, you start really getting the most of your dealing, crawling, and such in this level. Now, you said you had trouble with the conveyor belts. How did you like the boss rush of this stage?
Yeah, the I brain don't get the it. Like, these brains are coming down from a conveyor belt, but honestly, you could just throw shurikens at them, and you probably have, like, 100 by now, so it really doesn't mean anything, honestly.
I don't think there's necessarily a pattern to them, so you could get a bad roll of the dice as well, and they could get close to you. Or maybe that was the case on Expert. They took a bit more punishment, but they can swarm you, but if you can kind of stay in the lower left-hand corner of this fight, they don't really get close to you very often.
Oh, I think I played on normal difficulty because I'm a noob. So
yeah, I mean, I played through the game before, so it was... It's, again, part two of this level. It is another complete change of pace because now you're in sort of like a sandy area full of antlions with a body weapon in the background.
I don't even know if it was sandy. I would say it's like some kind of monster stomach, like Gradius or something going on. No, or like R-type. And then there's some, like, monster in the back, like, targeting you. I mean, yeah, it was a really cool level, but why are we here? Like, I just... It's really great that I have zero context on this game, because every time there's a new stage, I'm just surprised. I'm like, oh, I guess we're in a stomach now.
The titular body weapon, I forget what this thing's actually called. I think it's like,
okay, I have it open. It's called the Hydra. My favorite.
It's called the Hydra. I was trying to remember. It was like the unicorn in Ghosts and Goblins. Isn't really a unicorn, except it has one horn. It's more of a fucking ogre. But yeah, it's called the Hydra.
You know, the Hydra, yeah, are my favorite enemies in Dark Souls.
Exactly. I don't know if it's possible to shake off the targeting reticule if it gets on you.
I'm not sure either. I mean, I tried to move in a way as quickly as possible to get around it, but it caught me sometimes. I mean, it doesn't do too much damage, especially because there's not that many enemies otherwise, so it's not too bad, yeah. But yeah, it's annoying. And the
I think that was random as fuck, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it was really one of the most inspired screens in the game, and I don't think there's any that really do the same kind of thing again in the game, and I kind of wish there was. Or I even wish that Body Weapon itself is a bit more difficult than towards the end of the game, so that this would be a bit more climactic. But I thought this was a really cool screen. Yeah, I mean, the antlions were one thing. They're more there to slow you down so the Body Weapon can target you. But we'll pass this screen and we'll get to this Body Weapon itself, this Hydra, apparently. What do you think of this battle?
Well, first of all, I'm still over shock about how the levels are progressing in strange ways. But, this one also took me a couple of tries to learn. It's got, like, a laser attack, which is pretty easy to dodge, but I was pretty bad at dodging the hand for a while, and that it causes a lot of damage, especially because, it has a lot of HP going on, too. Like, you think you're done with it, but then it's, like, turning a different color, and it's still going. Yeah, I definitely used, the ninjutsu here, the fire one, just to give myself some extra hits on it. But otherwise, yeah, it took me a while, but once I got the hang of it, not too bad. Just like the Hydra in Dark Souls.
Yeah, I think, again, like you said, the hand is probably the biggest obstacle until you learn how to deal with it. But I just think the boss is fucking cool, and big ground beef monster with like arteries sticking out of his head and stuff. It's cool. I really think it's an inspired fight, and again, it seems like round three is way too early for this thing, right? Like, it seems like it should have more things to do and be way later in the game, because it's cool as hell. It's cool as hell and crazy, and I just fucking love it, and it's, I don't know, I like that it's in the game, I guess, and I just kind of wish it was more robust and later in the game.
I just desperately want context for this game. Like, why are we going through a lab now? And now why are we fighting the Hydra? Like, what's going on? I don't know. I guess in a way I'm kind of glad there's just a mystery for me. I'm like, well, okay, so now we're after a stomach. Where is it going to take me next?
Yeah, like, Neo Zed has a lot of different super weapons. We fight another super weapon later as well, the Mechagodzilla, but the friggin' giant monster that looks like a Toxic Crusader, and he's, that's what I gotta say about Body Weapon. It's cool, and I think it represents, again, another point in the game where things are getting a little more complex in terms of the fights. Yeah.
I think you like Spellsman way more than I did. I mean, that was neat, but you just really think it's neat.
Oh, I like giant monsters.
If it wasn't named Hydra, I'd be a little more receptive, but, you know. Not spewing water from me at the bottom of Darkwood Garden.
Right. So, you know, Neon Knight Rider's time, round four, destruction, we gotta do some surfing. But the surfing is similar to horseback, but it's a bit different. How's the surfing?
Oh man, I love how we just gone from, like, you know, like, a monster stomach to now we're just surfing in USA. But yeah, surfing is more or less the same as the horseback riding, personally, but now you got, like, these sweet ramps, and you have to collect your shurikens back, and I wasted so many on this stage. But otherwise, yeah. I feel like, for the most part, it was, like, just a more difficult version of stage two, up until the boss.
I think the big difference with the enemies here is that they will, well, I mean, I think there's two different kinds of enemies, right? Some that go towards the top of the screen, and some that come out. The thing is, enemies in the background will either go to the left or the right, and that'll dictate which side of the screen they're coming from. And that's something you have to pay attention to, because enemies coming from behind can easily hit you and knock the power out of you. Yeah. You just gotta pay attention to that.
But you can still jump kick them on the surfboard, and that was pretty radical.
Yeah, pretty radical, dude, yeah.
But it was early on, I don't know if I ever, like, can you jump kick on the horse? Oh, man.
I'm not sure, I don't think I've ever tried it.
We can definitely jump kick on the surfboard, though, so that's worthwhile.
We encounter sort of like a power armor at the end of this section. This fight's not so bad. How did you find it?
Yeah, I guess it's pretty not memorable because you just really dump and kick it or just throw a few shurikens, really.
Yeah, I think it mostly uses mines, which are fairly easy to avoid.
Yeah.
This boss sort of telegraphs later encounters in the game that are the same except a bit more difficult, but this one itself's not that bad. But right now, we're going to defeat it and get back onto land. And this whole section, part two, it's mostly platforming again, but now it has a lot of, like, pipes and jets of gas and such. And the pipes are really a prominent fixture from here on out. And it also introduces winged ninjas, a prominent fixture from here on out as well.
Yeah, yippee.
What are your thoughts on all these new elements?
So, part of me was like, okay, cool, there's a platforming stage and some cool climbing stuff. I get to hone my wall jump here, finally. But then, man, I got to the pipe section of the second half of this, and, like, everything flying at you is just really obnoxious, and I don't like it.
Yeah. Also, I gotta say about going to the pipes, when you go towards the end of the pipes, it's not really intuitive where you're gonna fall off them, and sometimes I found I was walking towards the edge, or not walking, but brachiating towards the edge of the pipes, and all of a sudden I would slip off them, and it looked like I had, like, another handhold left to get. So, the pipes take a bit of getting used to visually, because they're a bit deceptive. The winged ninjas are bricks of misery.
Yeah. And
I gotta get used to them, though, because they're here to stay.
I mean, there's lots of parts where I didn't know where to proceed, so I, like, just jumped somewhere, and then it turns out, no, I just fell in water.
Yeah. And the other thing about this level is it's big, and there's a lot to find in this screen. So, you know, not knowing where to go is sort of a legitimate response, because there's a lot of places to go.
And then you have winged ninjas just, you know, bothering you as you're trying to explore the level. So it's not really that exciting.
Yeah, those winged ninjas are pretty freaking tough. They're the real body weapons. because they body you. other than that, it's a bit of a slog from left to right in this one, but you'll make it through, and then all of a sudden you're back on your surfboard to fight a larger power armor.
Yeah, this boss is pretty beefy, or at least because I got hit so many times with the winged ninjas, I didn't have power anymore. So it took me a while, and I was just really bad at learning how to dodge things for a long time, but it just has like a brain shot. It just shoots bolts at you, and then occasional mines at you or whatever. I don't know. Anyway, it was pretty forgettable, even though it was pretty tough.
Well, the thing that makes it tough is I think it has like three phases all together.
Yeah.
So that's what sort of drags it out. Again, they could have done like a giant fish or something. After having body weapon, they could have done something a little more interesting for the surfboard level.
Yeah.
Like, could have one of those pizza monsters from... But anyways, yeah, it's, like you said, this one's not that interesting, but, you know, I mean, it is a multi-phase mech fight, but I guess in terms of of shinobi bosses, that's not that interesting. So that'll tell you a little bit about how eclectic you can get it at times, but, yeah, it is what it is. It's a bit long, but I don't think it's necessarily a test of your skills, this particular one. Now, round 5, Electric Demon. Now, this one has a large outside area. We're starting outside of another sort of installation. Tell us about this exterior area.
So most of this area is lots of minor platforming, but everything pretty much explodes. There are mines everywhere, especially on top of the platforms. Those also explode, so you have to keep moving. And also, there are enemies that are, you know, shooting guns at you, and some of them shoot upwards, and those aren't too fun.
Yeah, the guys with the mortars kind of launch upwards from behind walls, so that's a little bit tricky at times, for sure. I find it strange that this base is sitting on all of these, like, gas tanks that are primed to explode when someone walks on them. It seems like a really dangerous environment to be working in, I'm sure that...
And people are just shooting guns everywhere? Like, is that a good idea?
One stray mortar would set the whole fucking place off. you know, it's a serious health and safety violation, but I don't know. I guess they're evil ninjas and soldiers. They know what they're doing. I think there's a... I think this stage would be fun to go fast in, but there's so many mines, so many gunners, and so many exploding tanks that I took my time with this. to be blunt, I took my time with this.
I feel like most of the stage can be done quickly, but then you get up to the mortar parts, and then I have to slow down, because I would just jump kick most of the things in my way, and then I'd find out, oh no, if I do a jump kick, then I'll land in the range of fire, and then I have to slow down.
Yeah, you could do the shuriken spray, I guess, but that uses 8 shurikens, I think, so...
Not that you, like, get thrown a ton of them, anyway.
Well, yeah, but it's still a bit of a waste.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a hectic run through the first zone, and if you remember back in round 4 Destruction, at the very start, the first boss of that, the Power Armor, I think there were 2, but you only fought 1. The other Power Armor is here, and you fight it on land this time, and it's a bit different because it dashes at you a lot.
Yeah, good thing it's on land now, because now I can just jump kick it away and, like, completely avoid its fire, and it's, like, the most ridiculous easy fight, so... I think it's not really memorable, other than, like, thank you for dashing and being really predictable.
You can block its shots as well, and I don't know if you can block all of them in succession, but it's I think that's pretty important to mention you can block its shots, because you can... you know, deflect it, but then return fire and then safely jump over. It can dash back and forth a couple times in a row, I think, so you just have to be sort of on guard. But as long as you're attentive, this one's, you know, just as... you can take it down just as easy as the last couple, so... You know, it's just another armored mech.
Yeah, you could just jump kick it all the whole way. That's it.
Yeah. Part 2 of this area is quite a bit different than part 1. It's sort of a maze this time.
Yeah. It's a lot of climbing on pipes, and there's occasional elevator sections, but I don't know, I kind of like this area. I guess I like the change of pace. Even if it was a bit confusing.
How do you clear the pipes in the stage? Because you have to destroy some pipes to get through it.
Yeah, so I would usually just shoot at them and then wait for them to count down, which is a very lengthy process, but I don't know, I guess I was in the mood for like a slower paced stage at this point in the game, so I was just like, okay, I'll wait it out.
Yeah, so these time bombs actually are useful for once and break your paths open. Yeah, it's a maze, but at the same time it isn't, because it doesn't really ever open up too much, but it is a different kind of pace, and a change of pace is always welcome, and yeah, I kind of like this area. You may have noticed in the background, sort of like Body Weapon, but not active, there's sort of like these metal dragons. We have to fight our very own Mechagodzilla at the end of this level. How did you like the Mechagodzilla fight?
Oh man, this fight was really cool. One, Mechagodzilla looks awesome. But you know what? Actually, I take it back, because I remembered this fight would have been pretty smooth sailing, except there's a part where rocks fall on you, and those aren't too easy to dodge, so I lost pretty much most of my health on that. Like, Mechagodzilla will, like, shoot out these, like, homing missiles at you, or whatever they were, like, homing spears, but you can dodge them pretty easily. And then it breathes out fire, which is also relatively easy to dodge. But no, it's the falling rocks that are really annoying. But otherwise, it would have been a really cool fight. I would have liked it a lot, just falling freaking rocks.
Yeah, the rocks, I don't think that happens after you break its head off, but you just kind of got to get away from it and sort of just watch the ceiling when it's stomping around, because its fire, flamethrower attack does a lot of damage, and it's difficult to avoid if you're right next to it, because I think you have to double jump to avoid it if you're next to him. So I really like this boss. It is Mechagodzilla, because number one, it's based on the 70s Mechagodzilla, actually, because it has the sort of klaxon head when you destroy its outer head, and that's like straight out of the Terror of Mechagodzilla. Like, it's a straight rip in that sense. It's not an exact look-alike at Mechagodzilla, but considering you fight Godzilla in the Revenge of Shinobi, like actually fight Godzilla. It's
Why
definitely
are you fighting
meant
Godzilla
to be Mechagodzilla.
In Shinobi? What did Godzilla ever do to deserve this?
Well, you also fight Spider-Man and Batman in Revenge of Shinobi, so you know there's that.
I should check out this game next.
Yeah, you can take a look at it. They were censored in some bits because of, you know, copyright. Yeah, there's a lot of like movie characters in the Revenge of Shinobi. So I kind of like that connection. It's definitely Mechagodzilla. I like that. Again, it's more of a involved fight. And I mean, the three-tiered power armor gunship boss was a sort of an involved fight, but I kind of think it comes together a bit better in this fight. And it's a more interesting foe. So I just like this battle. I ship Mechagodzilla with body weapon.
Mr. OTP?
Yeah, for this game anyhow. But all of a sudden, we destroy this mechanical dragon, and we're falling from the sky on a mountain cliff with rocks in round six traps.
You know, this game really hurt me when I said, I really don't like the falling rocks since Mechagodzilla fight. So they're like, alright, how about an entire platforming section involving falling rocks? And, like I mentioned before, you'd think the double jump would be fairly basic to learn in a platformer game, but no, I still have no freaking clue how to pull up a double jump successfully. The stage gave me so much trouble. I hate the stage.
I'm not 100% on the double jump either, and it is absolutely required in this level. There's a lot of rocks you can jump to if you wait for them to lower, then you run the risk of falling off the bottom of the screen, and it's not just falling rocks that are in the air of the stage.
It's not just. Suddenly, maybe some ninjas will be like, you know, just some basic ninjas will be hanging out on some of those rocks. You have to take care of them first. But then, how about some wing ninjas flying at you as you're trying to platform with the double jump that you can barely do?
Yeah, yeah. So this is easily the most demanding section of the game, in my opinion. This is probably the most bullshit section of the game. And it's not so bad if you can consistently double jump. But again, the double jump isn't super intuitive in this game. So that's why I was kind of saying it needed to have more double jumping even as far as the first round. Just to get you ready for this.
Or maybe just have like a double jump that works like any other double jump in a video game. I don't know why this was so difficult.
Yeah, a double jump that, you know, you activate your second jump anytime in the air would have worked. And it would have been kind of ninja-like, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. It's definitely my least favorite section in the game, and it could have been really good.
I don't know. It's already the falling rocks part. Even if you had a normal double jump, I don't think I'd have liked the section anyway.
Well, I guess the winged ninjas would still be pricks of misery, but yeah. It would make it a bit more palatable if you had a double jump that worked like other double jumps.
Yeah, but we're still not done with these falling rocks. Because then this boss just shows up, flies around, and unfortunately, at least the rocks aren't moving this time, but you're still required to jump. And it's like a flying wing ninja bird. I don't know what the hell it is. But anyway, the point is I couldn't do my jump kick, which is usually my go-to in situations like this. But no, that failed me. So I had to stick to throwing my shurikens very slowly and dodging with the best of my abilities.
I don't even really understand this boss because I don't think I got hit when it turned into feathers.
Does it even take damage when you throw the shurikens at it when it's in feather mode or whatever?
So yeah, I'm reading that you can hit it when it's in the feather form and it will make itself vulnerable again. So I think I was just launching out shurikens because you get hundreds of them.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I want to get this.
I don't know. I guess
with.
I just didn't get hit by it. But I thought that was just a game being kind after a bullshit section. But
it could have been worse. But you know what? After that falling rock section, I just don't know. Let's get out of here.
So after defeating Harvey Birdman, you might think that, okay, that was a grueling level. Maybe now we can get on with our lives, but no.
No.
we're in sort of a traditional palace, fortress kind of area, and this is a labyrinth.
Yeah, sometimes you think you're going to the correct exit. You're like, okay, this is the only door I see, but no, it takes you back to the entrance. And, you know, it's a good thing I found this stage kind of enjoyable in a way, just the labyrinth part was really garbage. Like, I kind of enjoy the platforming, but then just looking for the exit was not exactly ideal. And thank goodness I learned how to wall jump at this point.
Oh, yeah, because there's some spikes when you wall jump.
Yeah.
You gotta be very kind of careful and precise with it. What about that room where you gotta jump on these crates going up into the sky with winged ninjas?
Yeah, okay, maybe running that wasn't exactly fun.
It's like, hey, you thought you had enough winged ninjas, here's some more. I mean, like, other than the sort of punishing wall jumping and the getting sent back and all that, it's not as difficult as the first part of the level. And
I mean, you brought up the box part, and I barely remember that. But you know what, it's not as bad as the falling rock section, but I'm still like, I don't want to do that again ever.
Yeah. The boss, however, I mean, personally, I don't know about you, but I personally found, like, the Kabuki boss here maybe the most difficult in the game. But I think it was during its second phase when it was going up right across the top of the screen. I found that difficult to avoid, but I actually died a couple times on this boss.
I had some difficulty with it, but fortunately, you can actually block its projectile attack, so that's not too bad. But once it starts spewing them in all directions, then it's like, well, screw this. Yeah, it's not fun anymore. In a way, I did like it, though. I guess this is my personal favorite, maybe. No, maybe it's Mechagodzilla. I don't know. Anyway, it's not too bad once you get the hang of it, though. It's just that all projectile attack should be easy to dodge, but no, it's not.
It's an attack where she sort of goes from one side of the room to the other on the top of the screen. I find that difficult to avoid. And again, when the sort of like the different forms of her merge into one for that second phase, everything becomes a lot more difficult. And yeah, I definitely took a couple of deaths here, yeah.
After you use all your deaths, you know, in the falling rock section.
Yeah. The first time I fought her, I used my Ikazachi on the first phase, forgetting that there was a second, and I was like, oh
no.
I should have saved this, but yeah. Yeah. Definitely the one I had the most trouble with. But also, again, I really liked the boss.
Yeah, I guess that's how I feel too. At least on falling rocks, that's another thing too.
She could have had falling rocks.
That's true. I just get sprayed with needles.
Once we defeat the Kabuki in her beautiful Broadway theatrical debut at Kabuki Theater, we go to round 7, the final confrontation. We start this level, it's almost like you're in an R-type level, going underneath like a ship. There's a lot of vents and jets of flame here. How is underneath this battleship? How's that?
This is a lot slower paced, but honestly, I didn't mind it as much. It's more of a platforming section anyway, because you can just hang off the ceiling and then throw shurikens up like the jets. And then that's pretty much it, really, for this part at least. And it's smooth sailing so far.
Again, you just gotta be careful hanging onto these pipes that you just don't accidentally walk off them. But
yeah.
Brachiate off them. Yeah, it's pretty straightforward, but I mean, it's different, and I'm glad there wasn't any winged ninjas here. I was wholly expecting this. The main enemy here is sort of these little circle robots, though, and you fight a lot of those in the elevator section right after these jets and vents section. The elevator has a lot of these little robots as well as a lot of turrets. It's probably the most demanding elevator.
Yeah, like, when you have, like, at least one on the screen, it's not too bad. They shoot, like, a projectile at you, and you just jump over that. But then they start throwing, like, three at you at once. And dodging those bullets at once is not good.
Yeah. And, I mean, you can destroy them, but they come in, like, again, three or four, so you're not going to get them all.
Right.
But once we make it through there, we're on the deck of the battleship now. And there's some gigantic cannons up here. How did you find getting across the deck?
Oh, This was a really slow paced section, but again, I didn't mind it too much just because it was fairly easy. As long as you go slowly, it's fairly easy to just throw a ton of strings at it. But I guess there's a bunch of jet parts, but you can destroy those, right? Yeah, it took me a while to realize you don't need to jump over them. You can just slash them.
Yeah, I was going to try to save and conserve ammunition with these gigantic cannons and just try to get past them, but every time I tried just to jump over them, I was getting shot, so I was like, man.
Just destroy them. Take your time.
Now, the most demanding part of the stage is coming up, sort of this combination that the wall jumps in later, these moving platforms. It's not just wall jumps and moving platforms, because there's a lot of electric grids here, and this is probably the most precision you need in the game.
Yeah, so this is mostly a section where you do a lot of wall jumping. First of all, you have to know how to wall jump, and you can't just take a rest anywhere, really, because it's either there's going to be an electric grid below you, or the floor falls.
Yeah.
So I think... Yeah, I used the Ikazushi here just because I really wanted to not burn all my health in this one section.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and I guess some people would use the speed up thing, but I think that would be a problem to use that because you have to be very precise in this level or you're going to get shocked. So I found just your normal jump height and speed was fine. And if you want to pop the shield, that works because chances are, as precise as you're trying to be, you're going to hit one of these electric grids.
I mean, there were a lot of deaths here, so, I mean, it wasn't as precise as I'd like it to be. But at least nothing is flying at you. That's the important part. It's just take your time, and no one will wall jump.
How about these, platforms and elevators that go in and out of the grids and you have to kind of time your jumps?
Yeah, that also took me a while. There's also a part where the platforms fall, and that also screwed me up because I still have no idea how to jump properly in this game. The elevators aren't too bad, the timing. It's just anything that involves some form of jumping, even though if it wasn't a double jump, it's not going well.
So, if the jumping was an issue, how did you find that while jumping up that semi-electric area with the wall closing in, or did you become a Joe Sandwich?
I became a sandwich, all right. Was no Mega Man X skill saved me there, because it's still not exactly how it works in this game.
I think what gets people in that area is that you have to notice that the wall's closing in. and then try not to panic. Because, yeah. It's sort of the last hurrah before Neo Z. And we kind of covered this section really quickly. But
it's mostly a platforming section, so there's not much to say other than, yeah, I jumped a lot, and I died a couple of times.
It's mostly platforming, but I can't understate that it's the most grueling platforming in the game. So it does take a while to get through. But at least you get, refilled before you fight Neo Z.
Yes. Who I honestly found kind of to be a pushover.
Well, yeah, he's not quite as potent as you would have expected. And he doesn't get, a ultra form or anything. I think he gets powered up, but, it's sort of the same kind of thing. I think he can block a lot of his attacks, and that's the main thing with him.
I just jumped over a lot of them. And you can jump kick him, so that's the important part to me.
What it comes down to is it sort of would have been a good precursor to
a Hydra.
Well, yeah, to a Hydra, but I was thinking more of Jackie O or whatever from Ninja Gaiden. Sort of that kind of fight. The Ninja Gaiden final battles often had multiple phases, and the bad guys in that became big fucking monsters. So that's kind of what I was expecting fighting Neo Zed, but yeah. It's not a bad fight, just sort of anticlimactic, especially since there's no mini-boss in round 7. This should have been the mini-boss, and then he should have been
Yeah, I was actually surprised there wasn't anything after this, because it's a boss that's more or less your size anyway, so after such huge bosses like Mechagodzilla and Hydra, It's like, yeah. I guess that's it.
Compared to some of the other bosses in the game, he's not that bad at all.
Imagine if he was a winged ninja.
Dude, if his final form was growing a pair of wings, I would just turn my Genesis off. So I mentioned the pacing and all that a little bit at the beginning of the podcast, and now that we've sort of rekindled some memories of this game, do you think the pacing was appropriate? It's faster than previous Shinobi games, but it's still pretty deliberate. In the end, do you think the pacing was all right?
Of course, again, I have no prior to experience to the previous Shinobi games, but I feel like overall the game had a pretty rapid pace, and at some stages it just slowed down a bit. But overall, I think it was pretty good. Increasingly went faster, at least once I learned the controls, I played a bit faster. So that was alright. And then when I wanted a breather, it was okay. Except for the falling rocks, that was not ever approved by me. But yeah, overall, I think the pacing was fine. Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, talking about the falling rocks, I just want to touch on this again because we talked about this during rounds 6 and 7. They're much more stringent than the previous rounds, especially in terms of platforming. Do they come off as too much of a difficulty spike, and do you feel like previous levels should have been more demanding to accommodate that, or do you think that this kind of spike is reasonable, being that they're at the end of the game?
So, excluding the falling rock section, which I'll complain about forever, I actually find the progression of platforming in the game decent. Like, the platform required for stage 6 in the labyrinth section was fine, because it took me 4 stages to figure out how to wall jump, and now they finally got it, they put me to the test, and I like that. And then they really push your limit to the very end of the game with stage 7 and the electrical grids. So that was alright, you know, with all the traversing with the pipes and all that. It was fine. It's just the falling rock section, because you never learn how to double jump, really, and I think even if you did, I don't think it would have helped much, because this section's just garbage.
Yeah, I guess I agree. The double jump is not really properly taught to the player, and, you know, we don't need, like, a long tutorial or anything like that. This has to be sort of taught through doing. And if your double jump is not intuitive enough, that you can't just learn it throughout the game, and you can't really set up other sections like this to do it, then maybe the double jump mechanics should be a bit different. I don't think the falling rock section would be quite as bad if the double jump was a bit more, at least a bit easier to execute. I think it's a cool idea for a section. I just think it was executed maybe a little poorly in this. And maybe it's just me needing to get good with double jumping. Really the only platforming section in the game I had a lot of trouble with. So, I don't know. For me, just being able to execute a double jump a little bit better would have made that section a lot more natural, I think.
I definitely like it in the sense that it was varied, because there's no other stage like it, really.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and maybe if the double jump was actually something that's similar to how double jumps work in other video games, I'd probably definitely be a lot more accepting of it. And I probably would have fallen off so many times or wondered if I was going to die, because you can actually get away with staying on the bottom of the screen for some time. But yeah, again, it's just, it feels not fair.
I know that the Shinobi games have a little bit of a reputation for being difficult games. Again, falling rocks aside, do you think that Shinobi 3 was appropriately difficult?
I played on normal as the noob here, so I thought it was pretty decent. I mean, there were some tough sections, but once you get the hang of it, you know, you get plenty of lives in here, and the continues are pretty forgiving, so I don't think it's too bad.
Right. The ninja game that a lot of people say is difficult, of course, is Ninja Gaiden on the NES. And I think that's a different kind of difficulty than this, because Ninja Gaiden on the NES, it's mostly very doable. There's some sections in the last level. Like, the way that enemies respond in Ninja Gaiden, like, if you move the screen a slight bit off then back on, the enemy will respond. And when it's eagles, that's a real problem. And when you're on narrow columns, it's a super problem.
And so, also birds. They're like winged eagles, but worse.
Exactly. And that's where Ninja Gaiden sort of gets its difficulty. But Ninja Gaiden is quite doable with some memorization. You can really go fast in Ninja Gaiden. But it's a different kind of difficulty than Shinobi. Shinobi's a very deliberate game, and it's difficult to compare it to Ninja Gaiden, because Ninja Gaiden is fast and Shinobi is deliberate. But because you're taking your time with most of Shinobi, you can react to a lot of it just because you're prepared to react to it as it comes on screen. So I think that Shinobi 3 is a much more manageable game than, say, Ninja Gaiden. And I believe Ninja Gaiden is very manageable for the most part. The difficulty of Shinobi 3 is quite manageable and quite fair. If with a couple of exceptions that I think with a lot more practice, I would find them more fair. But I think in terms of the progression of the game, maybe not so much, maybe not so well executed or what have you.
I mean, considering all the other attacks and controls feel pretty fluid, except for the wall jump, but that could just be me not understanding it completely and taking so long to get the hang of it. I think the game is responsive enough that if there's any really tough parts, it's fair toughness. It's not, like, memorization. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, even the bosses aren't too difficult, especially if you have powered-up shurikens. If you have powered-up shurikens, even in expert mode, they just melt really fast as long as you know their patterns and how to hit them. So I think it's mostly a matter of player familiarity with the game and skill, and I think it's usually quite fair.
I mean, even on normal, maybe it's different on expert mode, but they just give you a ton of shurikens anyway, so you're pretty use a ton of them, so why not? Also, the jump kick is really good.
Now, the first thing most people notice about Shinobi 3 is the aesthetic of the game, the art style, how it's executed. Especially back then, it was quite pretty. Now, do you find that this is held up at all in the game?
I feel pretty indifferent about it, but I guess in terms of presentation, that really impressed me was just the stage variety. Because, again, like, with zero context of the story, I'm just impressed that we went to a forest, and now we're in a modern-day lab? And now we're also in a science fictional lab? And now we're in a monster stomach? And the next thing we know, I'm, like, surfboarding. So in terms of that, I think it was really neat.
I think the auto-scrollers are maybe the nicest looking. I guess the game I could compare it to the most in terms of graphical flavor is probably Contra 3. It has a lot of similarities. The jet ski level is sort of in Contra 3 is sort of similar to the surfboard in Shinobi 3 and all that. So it's sort of a product of its time. I do think I remember being somewhat wowed by the game the first time I played it because it's pretty good for a Genesis game, and I don't mean that in a condescending way, but a lot of Genesis games are a little bit muddy in the color palette. But this game is quite good looking for its platform and the era, and it looks good, and I think it holds up. It's maybe not as shiny as I remember. Just to wrap things up, do you have any final thoughts on the Shinobi 3 Return of the Ninja Master?
So when you first pitched Shinobi 3, I was a little hesitant about it, but I was, you know, into trying something new. So, you know, first round, I'm like, all right, I guess this is okay. And, you know, slowly getting there as I'm learning the controls, I'm like, okay, it's a pretty decent game. And, you know, despite the falling rocks and all that, I think I had an overall fun time. I don't think I'm in love with it or anything. I don't think I'm too intrigued in the other games, except maybe two that you told me has, like, this hilarious copyright bosses in it. But otherwise, I think it was a fun game to play for the short podcast kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I also suggested Ristar and Dynamite Hitty, so
I guess I was in the mood for ninjas, all right?
Yeah, I think I had a better memory of this game than it actually was. I still like it. And I still think it's the best Shinobi game, if that says anything. But I think I had a shinier memory of this game. Probably the last time I played it would have been 10 years ago. So, yeah, I think I remembered it more than it was. But I still quite liked playing it. And I think it's actually the Hydra or body weapon that sticks in my mind the most. So whenever I think back on this game, I kind of remember that. And that's such a high point for me. Maybe that to sort of color my memory, maybe, but I still think it's quite good, and I still think it's worth playing. And I actually kind of want to play through the other Shinobis again now, especially the ones I didn't finish, like Revenge of Shinobi and Shadow Dancer. I know what to expect with them, but I think I'll have a bit of a better appreciation now for it. And yeah, I kind of want to play some more ninja games, but Shinobi 3 was a pretty good stopgap for the time being.
I guess the actual truth is I'm more of a samurai person.
So that's been our brief podcast for Shinobi 3, Return of the Ninja Master, for the Genesis. I thank you for listening this month. If you want to reach me, it's Mattazoic on Twitter, MattazoyC. It's like the Mesozoic era, except the dinosaurs are better. Website's the same, mattazoic.com. Where can we reach you, Chris?
You can reach me at twitter.com/Karasu, CAWRASU.
And how about our horse, Arrow?
Our dear horse, Arrow, who is the best horse, not the one in round two of Shinobi 3, is twitter.com/agrocast, AGROCAST.
Right, and in the month of October, what pants-shittingly scary-tastic game are we going to play?
We're going to go into a very creepy... I don't know. Okay, you know what? We're playing Darkest Dungeon, and I've been playing this since August already, so I've been holding this in for a very long time. So yeah, we'll talk about how I'm really bad at strategizing party compositions and how everyone ends up at death's door every time I play. It's like 3 out of 4 people. It's like, alright, cool. Everyone has to go straight to the asylum now.
Right, so yeah, I've been wanting to play Darkest Dungeon for, well, since it came out, so I picked it up recently as well, and I've been playing the shit out of it, so it should be a pretty good podcast.
Yeah, it was just kind of conveniently worked that we were both playing a new game at the same time for once, instead of you suggesting a game to me, and then I'm playing it 5 years later, just like near.
Alright, well, we will see you in October. Prepare to get spooked.
Ooh. Cheers.
Cheers.
Some people will do anything to take their favorite video games everywhere they go. But now Tiger gives you all the fun and excitement of your favorite arcade game in the palm of your hand. Games like Shinobi, the ultimate ninja must defeat 7 terrorists through 4 exciting levels of play to free the kidnapped children of world leaders. Also coming soon from Tiger, Jordan Byrne, Simon's Quest, Double Dragon, Marble Madness, and more. Tiger LCD Video Games.